international level, and maybe, you know, he'll work it out better than I can work it out. So we'll hear Father Kirill a little bit, and hopefully we'll have maybe some time for a few questions.
Thank you. Thank you, dear Father Stephen, for this opportunity to address again this congregation. Yes, you suggested a topic which is really thrilling, and it's not easy to develop, because the topic of the global orthodoxy, the Orthodox Church of the global world, has to do with a lot of things. For instance, it has to do with the issue of identity, of what is Orthodox, what does it mean? For centuries, we have identified, we have accustomed to identify ourselves with the East, and we often call ourselves Eastern Christians. But what is Eastern nowadays? Here in the United States, are you Easterners? I'm not sure. It depends, of course, from where you calculate what is East. Probably for another Orthodox country, or the country with a strong presence of Orthodoxy there, Japan, you are the Eastern Christians. So nowadays, East and West have been confused, have been really mixed up, and such an identity as Eastern Christians does not help ourselves to identify ourselves, neither the others to understand what is Orthodoxy about. So then, what it means to be a member of the Orthodox Church, which has become global in the globalized world, which has become accepted in different parts of the world. We even have a chapel in Antarctica, actually, and the Patriarch of Moscow recently visited the chapel and celebrated there. It is a chapel which has been built by researchers, Russian researchers on that continent. So it has reached even that continent. The Orthodox churches nowadays are everywhere. Actually, I experience it myself because wherever I go, I travel quite a lot over the world, in every part of the world, and it's not difficult at all for me to find a church where to go on Sunday. I once upon a time found myself in Wisconsin, and I woke up on Sunday, I wanted to go to the liturgy, and I just Googled where the closest church is, and I found actually a number of them in the proximity of approximately 1 mile. I thought, would it be possible if I would wake up somewhere in the middle of nowhere, in some remote region of Russia, and Google and find the same number of churches in the proximity of 1 mile? And I thought probably it would not be the case. So it's not really locally confined, the Orthodox Church. It is really global. It is really universal. And this is great, because this gives to our church the dimension that it had historically. Because the idea of the Christian Church is to be universal. The idea of the Christian Church is to be boundless, to have no limits for its spread, for its presence. That was exactly the idea of Apostle Paul when he insisted that the initial Christian nucleus, the earliest community of Christians, are, they didn't call themselves at the time Christians, actually. They were a Jewish sect. Some of the members of the sect, which was, in effect, the earliest Christian community, wanted to be confined within the setting where it appeared, where it emerged. But others insisted that, no, we need to go further. We need to step over the boundaries of Jewishness and go to the heathen world. There was a struggle, there was an argument over this issue, and eventually the church decided to spread. And they went to Antioch and went further, beginning with Syria, and went further to other parts of the world, including such remote parts as India, Rome, Britain, and other very obscure places at that time. So that was the initial impulse of the Christian community to go everywhere, and it has been encoded in the DNA of the Christianity. We need to go everywhere. We need to be universal. That's why when we sometimes, as Orthodox, tend to confine ourselves to compartments of particular places of the world and don't want to detach ourselves from those places, we actually go against our own nature. That's what St. Maximus the Confessor said to be paraphysin, to be against the nature of our own tradition. Natural for us is to go beyond, always to seek something which exceeds our view, what we can see. And this is exactly what it means to be to live according to the nature of Christianity, of our own tradition. So to be Orthodox means to be universal, essentially. Not to be Greek, not to be Russian, not to be Serbian, Bulgarian, whatever, but to be everywhere, to be really the citizens of the world. It can sound like weird, well, because we know that to be cosmopolitan is not always a good thing, but it is essentially what we are as the Orthodox Christians. And the situation nowadays where the church has spread everywhere exactly brings us to this condition of being universal, of being everywhere. Hence is the solution to the problem, the so-called problem of diaspora, which has been discussed quite widely, and it has been put on the agenda of the Pan-Orthodox Council, but it has been dropped for some reasons. And still it is very much in the center of the discussion, and I know that it is very much it is a painful issue for the Orthodox in the United States and elsewhere in the diaspora, so to say. This division or dichotomization between the maternal churches and the churches of diaspora, it reflects not exactly what we believe about the church, about our own tradition. It reflects a rather recent situation which we adopted from the period of when the world was divided among the empires. When the world was divided and some empires had zones of influence and they struggled, they even fought for those zones, and they regarded there is a colony and there is the metropolia, and they pretend that they wanted to have colonies under their control. And very unfortunately, the churches at that time adopted this mentality, embarked on that mentality, which is essentially a colonial mentality. And as it happens quite often, whatever people bring to the church from the outside, in the church, it gets a sort of sacralized, becomes a part of the tradition. But it is not essentially a part of the tradition. When we study the issue, we find out that some things that we hold as an intrinsic part of our tradition, they are not, in effect. And this colonial approach is exactly this feature, which has been adopted to the Orthodox tradition somehow, became a part, a stereotype, a common stereotype which many hold, and which doesn't stand the studies when we study how it was in the times which we regard as normative for our tradition. So when we think in these terms, we find out that exactly this concept of diaspora is a recent one. It has been imported to our church from elsewhere, and it doesn't work. It contradicts our very tradition, our very identity of being Orthodox. That's why I think what the Orthodox Church in America holds and what it advocates for is exactly this initial Orthodox vision of what is the Church. That the Church is local everywhere. And essentially, it is a feature of of our tradition that we think of the Church in terms of locality, that the Church is local.
Unlike the Roman Catholic Church, which has developed a different system of coordinates, the Roman Catholic Church has an idea of universal church being embodied in a particular church, which is the Church of Rome, and that church claims to be representing the universal tradition, the universal jurisdiction. We don't have such a thing, because for us, every church is local. From our perspective, the Church of Rome is local. It is not, it cannot claim a universality, we still hold that. So it is important to understand that for us, every church is local. And again, when we speak about the church, what do we mean? What is the church? Sometimes people identify the church with the administrative structures of the church, which is not bad, but it is not a complete truth about the church. Because the structures, the administrative structures of the church, which include dioceses, patriarchates, metropolis, and so forth, they emerged in the time of the development of the church. They were not sent from God. They are not given from God. They are not divine institutions. They are institutions with which the church developed for its own convenience through the centuries. Those institutions reflected different structures on which the church relied very much. Mostly it was the structures of the Roman Empire. And those institutions certainly facilitated the church to fulfill its goals, like preserving unity, like preserving intercommunity between the local communities, and that's their functionality essentially. Those institutions are highly respected. They are important for the church, but it would be a mistake to reduce the church only to them. This would be a reduction of the church, one of many reductions that happened in the history of the church. And if we try to study what in the church, what particularly in the church always was identified with the church, we can find out easily that it is a community. A congregation, a community is really the nucleus, the core of the church, what constitutes their church. And always it was like that. So the community is essential for the church. And others, the so-called supra-communal structures, administrative structures, they facilitate the communities of the church to develop, but they cannot exactly be identified with the entire Church of Christ, the body of Christ. So having this in mind, we also understand the developments in the administrative structure. Because sometimes when we speak about the system of the global orthodoxy, we have in mind the administrative structures of the church, the diptyka, the system of the patriarchates, of the local churches, and so forth. But I think we should keep in mind primarily the communities, the network of the communities throughout the world, worldwide communities. This is the network which existed in the early church as well. The scholars distinguish a number of networks of different communities. For instance, the so-called Paulian communities, the communities which were established by Paul and which constituted a network which didn't have a strict administrative structure initially. They were united by the authority of Paul. They circulated epistles among themselves. That's why the epistles of Paul, they belong to that network. They were produced by that network, and they actually kept the network together. But it was not the only network that existed in the church at that time, because there were other systems of the church. Gradually, they developed into a new system, which was more territorial, which was more structured according to the structures of the Roman Empire, and thus the system of the dioceses emerged, and then the dioceses were united into metropolias, and the first big supra-communal structure that emerged in the church was the system of metropolias, even before the patriarchates, before the autocephalous churches and so forth. And those metropolis just replicated the structure of the Roman Empire. Then, by the Fifth Ecumenical Council, the system of metropolis developed into the system of the patriarchate, so the system of the pentarchy, with five patriarchates sharing responsibility for the entire ecumene, Orthodox ecumene, and taking care of them. Then, of course, the first one, the Patriarchate of Rome, fell out, and we unfortunately had a schism, which has been formalized in the 11th century, and since then we talk about actually only four major or ancient patriarchates lacking the first one, which was the Patriarchate of Rome. Then in the course of the time, some new patriarchates were added to this system, particularly through the Middle Ages, and thus the Patriarchate of Bulgaria and Serbia were added to this system, and later on other patriarchates, and altogether now we have 15 autocephalous churches, including the Orthodox Church of America, they constitute the pleroma, the fullness of the local churches. So primarily, even in this system of the churches, we need to keep in mind exactly the communities, because they matter most, and they constitute the core of the church. When we identify the church only with the administrative structures or hierarchical structures, we really have a danger of secularization. Yesterday, the question of secularization was raised. And I'd like to dwell a bit on why secularization is connected with reduction of the church, with reduction of our understanding of what is the church. When it happened in the Middle Ages that the church became identified wrongly only with the hierarchs, with the patriarchs, with the bishops, and so forth, it led to the situation when, say, lay people were somehow marginalized, were excluded from this identity. Of course, they were regarded as Christians, but it was a tendency to consider them not exactly as the representatives of the church, because the representatives of the church were the bishops and the patriarchs and so forth. Lay people were some kind of not quite representatives of the church. When you have such a situation, when you tell for decades or centuries to people, you know, as far as you lay, you don't exactly belong to where you belong. When you're told for so many times this thing, then all of a sudden, these lay people will say, okay, if I'm not a member of the church, I leave. Stay with your church. Be the church. I quit. That's how secularization happened, actually. When the lay people were leaving the church because they were told for too long that they are not identical with the church. That's why it is important, in order when we want to fight secularization, we need to bring back this identity of ourselves as true, full members of the church. We are the church. Only because of us, the church stands where it is. The church flourishes, prospers. It doesn't lose its members. So it is important to keep in mind this kind of identification. This is connected with our topic of the global system of Orthodoxy. Because of this identity of the church, as including everyone who comes to the chalice, who participates in the life of the church, this fullness of the church, not just universal, but also, so to say, social fullness of the church is preserved. The church has suffered from what the scholars say name as stratification. Stratification is a separation of the single body of the society into classes, strata. There are different classes, and they don't mix up very much with each other. And the less developed is the society, the more stratification, the more gaps are between the classes. And sometimes we feel we suffer the same in the church when we have this kind of stratification within the church. And this is essential stratification between the orders within the church. And when we allow this stratification to happen, we actually do injustice to the church, and we harm its universality, its universal character. Because universality is not just geographical, it is also not just horizontal, it is also vertical. It has to do with this stratification or making the church one single body, one single unity. That's why this feeling of belonging together to one single unity body is important, because it was not present in the church always. It also caused another phenomenon, which is from which the church suffers. This is the phenomenon of nationalism. This is the last topic that I'd like to address briefly. Sometimes people condemn nationalism, say that it is bad, and indeed it was condemned as a heresy of ethnophilism at the Council of 1872 in connection with the so-called Bulgarian schism in Constantinople, and it is indeed a heresy. But let us try to understand why it happened, why nationalism, which is very much contrary to the nature of the church, actually occurred. And it occurred, I think, exactly because of this stratification, because there was a huge gap between the hierarchs and the people. And what nationalism provided was exactly the feeling of belonging to the same body, regardless of the hierarchical rank. Say, people, they thought, right, but we are the members of the church. We belong to the same church. We are, which share the same chalice. And unfortunately, the instruments of the church became separating the classes within the church. But what reconciled in the 19th century those classes was exactly the idea of belonging to the same nation. The idea that every peasant, every, say, Bulgarian or Serbian peasant, and the patriarch belong to the same ethnos, to the same nation, made them rejoicing, made them actually feeling belonging to the same body. This developed into a very raw and nasty nationalism, certainly. But this nationalism stemmed from a very positive seeking of unity within the same body, something that the church could not provide at the time. That's why, in order, if we want to tackle nationalism nowadays, we need exactly to go back and to provide the church with other instruments, ecclesial, not ethnic, not nationalistic, but ecclesial instruments, how to reconcile the classes within the ecclesial body, within the ecclesial community. That's why we need to feel belonging to the same community, all of us, regardless of who we are. We are priests, monks, lay people, bishops, or patriarchs. And this will be a true token, manifestation of our true universality as the church. So that's maybe I spoke too much.
Wonderful summary. We probably have a time, just maybe a question or two. And so Mike.
Thank you for that. Okay. I was wondering, given those dynamics between sort of locality and universality, yeah.
Well, I think that at the present situation, as I said, the Eastern identity doesn't work anymore. It's not helpful. That's why it is more helpful to bring back the Orthodox identity, that we are Orthodox primarily, and that is our basic what we are. Speaking about this dynamism of reconciliation between the idea of universality and locality, I think we need to do this reconciliation work, because we need to preserve always locality. Locality is important. Locality is something that brings us the feeling of intimacy, of relationship with our community, because, well, we don't go to the universe. We go to a community, which is very local, very particular people, whom we like or maybe not always like, but we try to reconcile with them, to live with them together. And this is how, what is the church essentially, empirically, as as the phenomenon, as something that we can feel, touch, and taste. We can taste and feel and touch only what is local. But this locality, we should not make this locality a universal value, because locality should preserve this local value, and we need to respect other localities where we go. We need to go to every community with the idea that this is the universal Church of God. So sectarianism appears, well, we have sects in the Orthodox Church. We have sects, which means we have local communities which pretend to be universal, the holders of truth, that they hold the only thing that they hold is true and should be kept. We thus don't accept the other traditions, other communities. And this is wrong. This is how we make locality universality and mix those two things, those two traditions. I think that this phenomenon of globalization in which we live revealed another thing I wanted also, just very briefly, a few words to highlight, which also existed in the early church and was very much a part of the experience of the early Christians, that the practices of the Christian communities are diverse, extremely diverse. They cannot be unified, they cannot be uniformed. Every community can have its own somehow habits, rights, approaches, and so forth, and that is absolutely fine. That is exactly how the church emerged, as a bunch of localities, a bunch of diversities. And I think we have arrived at the same point at the moment, when we understand that every community, I go to many communities, and I should say that there is no a single case of two identical communities. They are completely different. And we started to understand, to acknowledge this, and to appreciate this. And I think this is a great thing. We need to continue like that, to appreciate localities of the others in order to enjoy our own locality.
I think we better do the rest of this. Students. Thank you so much, Father, once again. Father, you returned to Ukraine this week, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Father came from Ukraine this on Friday, back to Ukraine
on Tuesday. Yeah.
Father,